Today, an island of strangers. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analysis, one of those posts covering finance and property news. Those data from the ABS on overseas arrivals and departures in Australia revealed that in March 2025, short-term visitors were 761,230, an increase of just 190 arrivals on the 1 year earlier. But short-term residents returning at 840,000 were up 9.5%, compared with 1 year earlier, and total arrivals at 1,688,650 was an increase of 4.6% from a year earlier, while total departures were down 2.4% on a year earlier. These statistics, of course, report the number of international border crossings rather than the number of people. And this release represents statistics on all overseas arrivals and departures, which are not the same as overseas migration statistics. International students, by the way, were up, with higher education numbers at 40,050, compared with 27,930 a year earlier. AMP Shane Oliver said on X that the ABS March international arrivals data, based on net permanent and long-term arrivals, and by visa groups excluding temporary visitors, suggests the fall in Australian net overseas migration may have stalled and started to reverse. We won't, of course, get the complete picture until later in the year. The last available data point from the ABS is to June 2024, when net overseas migration data reported 446,000 in 23 to 24. That's down from 506,000 a year earlier. Now, of course, high migration puts pressure on home prices, stokes demand for rental property as well, and also paves a path to lower wages for some, which, of course, businesses support. And the Treasury welcomes more people to pay more tax. The ABS population clock suggests that the Australian population has risen by 8.7 million this century, as at May 2025, that's a 46% increase. And the 2024 population statement from Treasury's Centre for Population projects that Australia will grow by 13.5 million people in just 40 years. This anticipated 13.5 million population gain will be driven by a constant high net overseas migration of 235,000 per year. That's more than doubling the 90,000 average net migration in the 60 years after World War II. This projected 13.5 million population increase is equivalent to adding another Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane to the country's current population over the next 40 years. So to sustain, let alone boost, productivity growth, all of the housing infrastructure and business investment in these three large cities will have to be replicated in just 40 years. That, of course, is an impossible task. As Alan Kohler wrote the other day, productivity is declining and housing is unaffordable. Economic growth depends entirely on government spending and immigration, and high immigration has not been matched with enough infrastructure and housing to support it. As a result, Australia is divided, defensive, low-tech and uncompetitive. In 2025, the contribution of private business investment to GDP growth has fallen to zero. The growth in real capital stock per person is zero. Real person per capita income growth is zero. Mining investment growth is zero. Non-mining business investment growth has halved since Keating was treasurer. And the housing debt to household income ratio is five times what it was in 1985, while the average house now costs eight times the average income versus three times then. The reason more government spending is needed is immigration. The doubling of population growth from 1% to 2% a year is arguably essential to keep the place running as the birth rate declines, but it is causing profound structural changes in the economy because it is not matched by any serious planning for the extra people. The costs of housing and overburdened infrastructure and policing is sapping productivity while making life nasty and brutish. Australia's economy is an immigrant-fed basket case. that hardly featured, by the way, in the recent election campaign, and Labour seems intent on keeping population growth high via high migration. So I was very interested to see that the British government on Monday announced plans to cut migration to the UK, tightening the rules on who can work, study and live in the country. Announcing the plans on Monday, Britain's Prime Minister Keir Starmer said the strategy will finally take back control of our borders and close the book on a squalid chapter for our politics, our economy and our country.
These rules become even more important. Without them, we risk becoming an island of strangers, not a nation that walks forward together. So when you have an immigration system that seems almost designed to permit abuse, that encourages some businesses to bring in lower paid workers rather than invest in our young people, or simply one that is sold by politicians to the British people on an entirely false premise, then you're not championing growth, you're not championing justice, or however else people defend the status quo. You're actually contributing to the forces that are slowly pulling our country apart. So yes, I believe in this. I believe we need to reduce immigration significantly.
This is a significant change from Starmer's earlier position, but also echoes earlier promises over many years from many leaders, including Tony Blair, Gordon Brown, Boris Johnson, and Rishi Sunak. But words and figures differed, because net migration grew dramatically in recent years, hitting a record high of 906,000 in the year to June 2023, though there was a fall in the subsequent 12 months to 728,000, according to the Office of National Statistics. Remember that this is only legal migration. In essence, the UK experiment of high migration to support economic prosperity has failed completely, with growth slowing, housing more unaffordable, and wages depressed. Does that sound at all familiar? Now, the government has said in its blueprint on immigration that steep increases in net migration in recent years has been caused by, quote, a big increase in overseas recruitment, including a shift towards lower skilled migration, with a substantial increase in worker visas issued below degree level. The number of people arriving via the health and social care visa route to work in below degree level jobs rose from 37,000 in 2022 to 108,000 in 2023 to the UK, of course. The government said on Monday that it will now end overseas recruitment for social care visas, although visa extensions would be permitted until 2028. Starmer added that immigration reforms would end what the government describes as the country's failed experiment in open borders that saw migration soar to almost 1 million a year, noting it would ensure that people coming here earn the right to stay in the country. In his speech, he said, "We risk becoming an island of strangers," which for some was resonant of an infamous River of Blood speech given by Enoch Powell in 1968, when he said immigration made native Britons feel as if they had found themselves made strangers in their own country. But number 10 rejected any link, saying in a statement, "The Prime Minister rejects those comparisons and absolutely stands behind the argument he was making that migrants make a massive contribution to our country, but migration needs to be controlled." The Prime Minister has made the argument that migrants make a massive contribution to the UK and have done so for generations. The Prime Minister was using his own words to rightly recognise both the contribution that migrants have made over the generations, and to make the point that uncontrolled migration has been too high. "But look," they said, "this government is not going to shy away from this issue. The public are rightly concerned about the impact that uncontrolled migration has had on the UK. The truth is, the government has come under increasing pressure to tackle the thorny issue of immigration amid record migration figures." The strong performance of Nigel Farage's right-wing anti-immigration reform UK party in opinion polls and in recent English local elections has increased the need for the government to act quickly. The proposals will raise English language requirements for migrants, as well as the skills and level of education they need to obtain work visas. The government also said migrant workers will have to live in the UK for 10 years in the country before they can apply to stay indefinitely. The government said its new proposals back British workers over cheap overseas labour and would link migration policy with skills to boost economic growth. British businesses, though, are warning the UK government that plans to tighten immigration rules on foreign workers and to instead train and recruit more British personnel will lead to labour shortages in key sectors. Businesses fear that Brits can't or won't fill the gap created by likely worker and skill shortages, particularly in sectors traditionally heavily reliant on migrant staff, such as health and social care. Care England, which represents independent social care providers, warned that the immigration plans could have serious consequences for a sector already under immense pressure, and it noted that the care industry currently has 131,000 vacancies. Let's be clear, this decision is not a solution, Care England's chief executive Martin Green said, responding to the government's plans on Monday. It's a political gesture that treats the symptoms but ignores the disease. Rather than investing in the sector and solving the recruitment crisis, the government is closing the door on one of the only workforce pipelines still functioning. Social care is not low-skilled work, it is high-skill, low-pay work that deserves respect, proper recognition and meaningful investment. And Green said, while concerns about exploitation must be addressed, the proposed solution ending overseas recruitment entirely removes a vital workforce supply without establishing a viable domestic alternative. Business industry leaders say that the move to boost training and skills among British workers is certainly welcome, but they warn that labour shortages are likely to become more acute. Employers are clear boosting training in the UK is essential, but so is a controlled, affordable and responsible immigration system that keeps investment flowing to the UK, the UK's Recruitment and Employment Confederation Chief Executive Nick Carberry commented on Monday. Businesses will now have to carefully consider the detail of proposals to limit visas for skilled jobs below degree level, the Confederation of British Industry said. Labour shortages can't be solved by training alone. With the UK's workforce set to shrink in the future as our population ages, it's more important than ever that we support the business investments needed to underpin tech adoption and training, Ray Newton-Smith, the CBI's chief executive, noted. Businesses are keen to unlock more homegrown talent, said James Grattan, deputy director of policy of the British Chamber of Commerce. However, it's vital that the pace of change in the immigration system does not cut across access to global talent before the UK's wider labour market problems are properly addressed. Firms need access to the right skills to grow the economy, she said, and for some businesses, that will include bringing people from outside the UK. This is usually as a last resort when they've tried all that they can to recruit from the local labour market, Grattan added. Which begs the question, of course, for Australia. Are the current migration settings sustainable? Well, no, they're not. High migration leads to falling productivity and living standards and many risks building. And begs the question, too, are we creating an island nation of strangers in Australia? Well, I think we probably are. But more importantly, there is a huge gap between what governments are saying and what they end up doing. Some of that is because of pressure from business, but the broader pressure on home prices and on productivity may lead to change. However, it'll be interesting to see whether the UK does make a change or whether, once again, we continue to see high migration despite all the words that are issued. This, of course, is rather similar to what's happened in Australia, where everybody talks about it, but high migration is still very much in play. The bottom line is this: both the UK and Australia is struggling with productivity, with growth, and with better living standards. And until there's a consistent shift away from high migration, that's unlikely to change. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.